Hi listeners, this episode was recorded on the 29th of December 2019. In it, we briefly mentioned the bushfires that were burning in Australia, specifically New South Wales and in South Australia. A few days after recording, the fire situation across New South Wales, Victoria, Queensland, Western Australia, South Australia and the Australian Capital Territory became dire. An estimated 1 billion plus mammals, birds and reptiles have been killed in the worst bushfires Australia has ever seen, including an estimated 30,000 koalas in South Australia's Kangaroo Island, which is very significant due to it being the only chlamydia-free population in Australia, and may have also caused the extinction of some rare flora and fauna, including critically endangered Kangaroo Island dunnet. 33 people have lost their lives, including unpaid volunteer firefighters, of which this country so heavily relies on, and 10.7 million hectares, or 41,300 square miles of land, has been burnt so far. This area is equivalent to burning all of Kentucky, or almost half of the United Kingdom. We wanted to give the full picture, given we only briefly mention it in this episode due to the recording date. There has been a huge donation drive across Australia and throughout the world. Please visit bushfiresupport.com.au to find out where you may be able to help, should you wish to donate to a reputable donation fund. At the end of this episode, we will also point out a few specific places listed within that website that need attention, given recent media coverage. Thank you, and thank you for listening to The Edge and Trek FM.
This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, this is Jason Isaacs, sometime aka Captain or even Emperor Lorca. You're listening to Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Edge, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to Star Trek Discovery. I'm your host, Nicholas Paul Collinson. Joining me today is Liam Smart and Brandy Jackler. How are both of you doing today?
I'm good. It's very early in the morning, but I'm good. Yep.
It's like early afternoon for me. Ah, time zones.
Yeah. Ooh. It was only early because Brandy double booked herself.
I didn't mean to. I'm so very sorry. It's just the one day where I double booked myself is, of course, the only day that we could do this week.
Mm-hmm.
So sorry.
So popular.
Well, it's no, I'm nice not. Day. That's the funny thing is that I'm not popular. I'm not usually this busy. I'm almost never double booked. But of course, today would be that day.
Are you doing anything exciting this afternoon, given, you know, we're not good enough for you?
Oh, I see how it is. Well, that's fine. You don't get to know anything about what I'm doing if you're going to be like that, so.
Oh, well, I want to know.
Nope. No. You've lost that opportunity. Sorry.
Fine, then. How are you, Nick?
Well done, Liam.
Yes, how are you, Nick?
I'm doing well. I had a good Christmas, also a good birthday, because my birthday is the 21st of December, so we've had a good fun few days. I've got piles and piles of model kits to put together now. Yeah, and then just trying to enjoy the hot weather, as long as it doesn't get too hot.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Because I do live kind of in the bush, and if you've seen any of the news reports from Australia, you know that a fair bit of this country is on fire at the moment. So, it's a little bit stressful living in bushland at the moment.
Yeah, everywhere's been affected in Australia by some pretty bad fires. In South Australia, we've had them in the Adelaide Hills. About 85 homes, 400 other properties, a couple of lives. It's not great at all. I don't know, New South Wales has it a lot worse.
Hmm.
So, It's not
That's
fun.
Heartbreaking.
And we've lost a third of our Adelaide Hills wineries.
Oh, no.
That's the true tragedy right there.
Well, other than people, yes.
An entire third. That's pretty huge. That kind of really shows the scale of it.
Well, I mean, if you look at the Cuddly Creek fire map, it's about the same size as the Adelaide metro region. Just
wow.
In the hills. So, pretty sad stuff.
So, how about you, Brandy? How was your... do you have a big Christmas or a small one? Or
There are no children in our family, so it's just me, my sisters, their husbands, and mom. And we go to Dave's mom, my husband Dave. We go to his mother's for breakfast, and it's just the three of us for that, and then do the present exchange sort of thing, and then do... go to my mom's house. Both of my sisters are very good cooks, so I get to bring the stuff that doesn't matter as much because I'm terrible at cooking. So, Dave is sick. I'm sick too, though I'm starting to get better, but the amount of gunk coming out of my nose is frightening, to say the least. And now my younger sister is also sick. It was not our fault. It was not our fault. Because she got sick like that night, and that's not the way that this virus works. It takes at least a day or two to incubate. Then you start showing the symptoms. It's fun.
Lovely. At least you got a cold when it's cold and not a cold when it's 40 degrees.
I've had those too. But yeah, it is cold here right now. The high is below freezing. So the high temperature for the day, below freezing. So
I think our low last night was 90. Is in your figures.
Yeah. That's too warm for this time of year. Way too warm. Way too warm. Abnormal. I've been to that area in the winter and usually it's like 60s, 70s around that. So 90? No, that's bad. It's very bad.
No. I don't mind it. It's just, as I say, the fires are the scary stuff, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're not here just to talk about what we all did over Christmas. We're, of course, here to talk about the first two pieces of animated Star Trek that we've had for 40 years.
Yep.
Isn't it? I know that in the postcards episode, Chris worked it out exactly to the day.
Oh, yes,
I unfortunately
he did.
haven't gone to that detail, but we definitely know it's just over 40 years, which is it's pretty... I think that's pretty kind of momentous that we've got this now.
I think it is because, first of all, this is a new medium for Trek anyway, the short treks, because they only started doing that between seasons 1 and 2 of Discovery. And now it seems like there's going to be a lot more of those, and I'm all for it. I like the shorts. Bring me more shorts. Give me something in between shows to help tide me over, so to speak. And to have them be animated and show us, a glimpse of what we may come to expect from other animated shows, I'm all for that as well.
Do you reckon it'd be cheaper to run the animated shows than the real life people ones?
Not necessarily. It still requires voices, and the animation takes a heck of a lot longer than filming, so...
Okay, so there's pros and cons to each. I don't know. I didn't dislike these shorts. I think it was more, I'm not generally a fan of cartoons or animated stuff, and I don't think I ever have been. So, whilst I didn't dislike them, they weren't my favourite short treks.
I wouldn't say they were my favourite. I think they did well at what they were trying to do, which was just to sort of be a fun, cute sort of... first foray in animation to kind of show us what's in store, especially considering that there is the more kid-focused, still unnamed Nickelodeon series coming out at some point, I'm guessing within the next couple of years, I'm not sure. But I get the feeling that, especially the animation style of The Girl Who Made the Stars is probably what we'll see in that.
I don't know. See, there's only ever been two cartoons that have caught my eye in the last 10 years, probably, that I've actually watched. Other than that, I don't watch them at all. And I think that's what scares me a little bit, I guess, with Lower Decks coming out, is that will I like it being a cartoon?
Mm.
That's why I had issues, I guess, with Ephraim and Dot. I thought, oh, it's probably a little bit too kiddie for me. Especially more the animation style of it, because it's literally just a cartoon. I don't think Lower Decks will be kiddie, obviously, because we know it's going to be more of a comedy. But the Nickelodeon one, potentially, I might have issues with.
I'm just a huge fan of animation in general. So the fact of the matter is there are pros and cons to each, but you can do stuff in animations that you could never do in live action or even with visual effects. So there's, it's a different medium. It works a different way. And I'm excited to see what they do with it.
Having said that, those two cartoons that I have watched are Avatar Last Airbender and Dragon Prince, which are both by the same people.
I need to watch Dragon Prince.
You not watched Dragon Prince?
No, not yet. I just recently went through and did a rewatch of Last Airbender because my partner hadn't seen all of it. So we watched that and then we got on to Legend of Korra, which was also fun, but it doesn't have as entertaining characters.
Have you watched Dragon Prince yet, Randy? Like I said?
No! Did I not tell you how many things are on my list of things to watch? It is
unacceptable. Huge. I told you to put it up there.
Look, okay, it was competing with The Witcher and with The Expanse and with The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and with The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
And so you can just back off, all right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, if anyone's watched Dragon Prince, I highly recommend it. Good cartoon, mainly more the storyline.
All right, why don't we first talk a bit about our individual thoughts about The Girl Who Made the Stars. Even though these two came out together, that was the first in the air order, technically. So I wanted to look at this, and I like that this is the sort of continuation of the little prologue to Brother, to the first episode of season two of Discovery, because this is obviously the little story that we have Michael giving in voiceover. And I know a few other people looked it up, and I did this as well, and I found out that it is loosely based on an actual African creation story. It's from the Khoisan people. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. These are some of the people who've lived in the Kalahari area. Basically, this folklore, it states that as one evening, there was a young, lonely girl who, I think much like the girl in the story, as we were shown it, she wants to, there were no stars in the sky, so it was black and dark every night, and she wanted to visit other villages because she was lonely. And where it differs is of what she did in this original story is digs her hands into the ash or the embers of the fire and throws this into the air, and that creates not just the stars, but in some of the versions that I looked at, it specifically mentions that this created the wide shimmering pathway across the sky. So this created the band of the Milky Way, as it's seen when you have a clear night and you can actually see all the stars. So I really quite like that they had this story and they based it on not just real life folklore, but real folklore that, you know, many of us from a Western audience or from a European background would probably not be aware of. So it's something that is, even though it's real and it comes from, you know, the culture of our planet, of our species, is something that would be new to quite a few viewers. And I think that's interesting. I think it's good that they're not just going back to always stories from European culture. I think it's really good that they are branching out.
Yeah, I agree. Well, scientifically, according to scientists, life began in Africa. So honestly, those are the creation stories we should be looking at. Every culture has a creation story, just like every culture has a flood story and every culture has a, you know, death and destruction story. They all have them. It's kind of a consciousness thing, group consciousness thing. But I love that they use something that most of us white folk had no idea about, because that's expanding our knowledge. That's expanding our relationship with that culture through that one story. And I think that that's a beautiful thing. Plus, it's very feminist, and I'm all for that.
Yeah, that was super cool.
I was just also very pleased that they brought Kenrick Green back to voice his character.
Yeah.
Instead of just getting somebody else. No, no. They got Daddy back.
With the folk tale, it's quite often we see Star Trek sort of trying to not necessarily destroy them, but almost counteract some folk tales of specific alien species that they go across and visit throughout all the series. But this time they're actually using it as a mystical storyline to actually develop canon, I guess.
Well, they didn't debunk. It was a story being told, so they didn't really debunk any mystical factors of it.
Not in this. But Star Trek's usually
no. I know they usually do that. So, but it's a dad telling a story to his daughter to help her, you know, not be afraid. And there are always value to these stories, despite the fact that, you know, they may be able to be debunked by current technology or what have you. There's still something there that is worth listening to. And in this case, it's about, you know, conquering fear and also doing the thing that you know is right, despite what everyone else tells you, especially telling you you can't do it.
I think that's quite good. I think in a way it shows that Star Trek itself has, you know, changed and sort of matured in a different way into what we're seeing of it now. I'm thinking about this and also of New Eden, the second episode of season two, of just how the portrayal of, you know, people with, I mean, I guess this also goes back to Deep Space Nine, sort of with that different and more sympathetic portrayal of sort of old, you know, folk tales and kind of mythology and people with sort of strong religious beliefs, which in kind of, you know, earlier Next Generation, possibly original series, that would have been just maybe kind of shut down a lot more by kind of the main characters and trying to show this sort of like purely secular Federation. Whereas it is now becoming, whether it is, you know, the characters in universe or whether it's the message that the show is trying to get across to us, the viewers, is about being more just generally kind of accepting and sympathetic to, like you said, Brandy, the value that you can get from these stories, even if you don't literally believe in what they say.
But Dragon, that just reflects how we are in the real world a lot more sympathetic in certain areas than we used to be in the 60s and the early 90s.
I would hope so, yeah.
Yeah, I think the feeling is with those earlier series was not so much that they were trying to debunk religion as a whole, but they were trying to stop people who were using religion to manipulate others and not for their own good. So I think that's kind of where it was. That's probably... Yeah. I feel like that was the intent behind it. I could be wrong. I wasn't there. I mean, I was there to see the finished products, but I just don't feel like they were of a mind of, yeah, let's destroy this religion.
Oh, gosh, no. And I was never meaning
No. I didn't think you meant that. But I don't think that they came at it from a point of view of religion is bad. I think that they came at it from a point of view where there are bad people who proclaim to be religious. And we all know that's true.
Yeah. So the storyline in this particular one was ever so slightly different from what Burnham discussed at the beginning of Brother.
Yeah, and that was very interesting. Like I haven't watched it in a little while, but the one that she recites at the beginning of Brother is pretty similar to what I've read of the original story. And there are kind of different accounts of it depending on where you're reading it. I think it's quite obscure. It's not very well known. But I remember that in the way Burnham tells it, it does have the girl digging her hands into the dust or the ash and flinging it into the sky. Right. And there is no mention of her going off and meeting this strange creature and getting the weird egg with the firefly in it.
No, she had the egg with the firefly when she got there. She tripped over a rock when she was being chased by the night beast and it broke the egg and the firefly came out. No, it just gave her this kind of globe thing that was kind of spinny in parts, and see, she opened it.
I'd like to think that Michael got a little obsessed with the storyline and it became part of her, because hearing it ever since she was young, yeah. Obviously, Daddy Burnham has given it to her in a way that is obviously more suitable for the child to hear in terms of what the child needs to hear to get over her fears. But then I'd like to think that Michael then kept that story and then remembered it even after her parents had died, and then ended up looking up the real folktale.
I was going to say the same thing.
Oh, sorry.
That's how I look at it too. No, no, no. Don't apologize for us having like minds. Good grief. No, I had the exact same feelings. Like, she probably took that to heart. And when she got older and was thinking about her parents and her father, she's like, I'm going to find that folktale. And then, you know, she was quoting a more accurate retelling of said folktale. That's exactly what I thought too.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And she's Michael being scared of the dark when she was younger, then not being scared of the dark, and then finding out that there is a lot of terrible things in the dark and in the shadows, especially throughout season one, just matches up quite nicely.
Yeah. Well, she kept it together. It's where Alice in Wonderland came in.
That was
her go-to thing to keep her focused, because, you know, even when you know that the dark itself is not something to fear, there are things in the dark that are very terrifying.
Large things. So, what did you think about the animation on this?
I quite like this animation style. It reminds me of, you know, the recent Star Wars animated things as well. You know, it is a sort of very similar style to, like, the Clone Wars and Rebels, which is actually what I'm kind of expecting, again, the new kid-focused Star Trek show is going to look like as well. I feel like this sort of kind of over-stylized, kind of cartoonish proportion CGI I think it just really must resonate with that certain age range of whatever they're aiming for. I think it's like 6 to 12 or something like that. And I get the feeling that that is almost certainly what that new show will look like as well.
Yeah, see, I really like the animation of this one compared to Ephraim and Dot. Again, as I already said at the top of this episode, I'm not a fan of animated stuff as such, but it was very visually appealing. Like, given it's a mystical tale, adding the non-humanoid alien into it.
That was really cool. Yeah, I love that.
And that's to Brandy's point. You can do a lot more in animation than I guess you can with CGI. Although, I hope, that we'll be able to see that alien at some point in season 3.
Yeah, me too. I hope that it shows up. I really liked that aspect of it as well. It kind of goes into the ancient alien idea a little bit, and that's very fraught. And I know that Chrissy Leclerc-Salaghi, who is one of the hosts of The Line, would have a lot more to say about that, because she does her own podcast about why that show is terrible. But as a science fiction thing, I find it really fun and really interesting, and I think it was presented quite well in that one, that it's just this strange crashed alien that the girl encounters. And it is a little bit like the Calypso short trek, in that, like, they had the whole setting of Discovery flung, you know, 1,000 years in the future in that, and you were watching it, it was like, why do they do this? What are they trying to seed here? That's kind of how I feel about presenting that alien there. It's like, why put this in here if you're not going to use it again later?
I guess we'll see. Because we've never seen all of those hairy mud bots again.
Yes, thankfully.
Yeah, I would appreciate, though, like a mention in history in season 3. It's like, oh yeah, here's this time where the whole galaxy was crawling with these different hairy mud bots, and rounding them up took years.
That's what brought down the Federation. Harry Mudbots.
That was it. It was Harry Mudbots.
Harry Mudbots. Oh, no.
Just one guy created all of that mess.
just one guy who was somehow able to sneak onto the most secure classified ship in the Federation by hiding inside a space whale.
I don't know. Good old Harry Mud.
Boost your security, Starfleet. Mm.
Was there anything you didn't like about the girl who made the stars?
Oh, actually, sorry, just before we get into that, there was one other thing that I did quite like, is that the overall idea of it, about sort of not being afraid of the dark, reminds me so much of my favorite poem, which is called The Old Astronomer to His Pupil, which I won't... It's by a poet named Sarah Williams, and I won't read the whole thing, but this is the one that you may well have heard of, the last line, which it just... The last line is, I have loved the stars too fondly to be fearful of the night. And I instantly thought of that when I saw the end of this short trek with the night sky lit up with all the stars, and suddenly the night is not fearful anymore because there are the stars to light the way. And that just resonated with me quite well, because it made me think of that poem and I really love it. And I recently read that poem at my grandmother's funeral, so it meant a lot to me.
Aww. You'll have to link us to that.
I will, yeah, it's great.
That's beautiful. Now, Brandy, was there anything you didn't like about the girl who made the stars?
No.
No?
No.
No?
Fine. No, I liked the story. I liked the animation. I liked the voices. I really, really loved the young lady who played young Michael. She was, especially when her dad's telling the story and the village elder's like, go and play. And she's like, oh, come on. I really enjoyed that little bit, because that was so Michael Burnham right there.
Yeah.
Even as a young girl.
Yeah, I can't really think of anything specific that I disliked about it. I think it was probably the one I like better out of the two. This one in Ephraim and Dot. Yeah, nothing springs to mind. It wasn't perfect, but I think that overall it was very fun, and it set out to do what it wanted to do, which was to present a fun, more kind of childlike interpretation of this myth, and just maybe give us a little bit of insight into Burnham's childhood as well, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah. I think the only thing I didn't like was... And I think it's something that happens across all of the animation of this type with children, and that's Baby Burnham's big eyes. They were sort of creepy in a way.
Hmm.
You don't think?
No, it's all a proportion thing, because when children are younger, their heads are huge compared to their bodies, and so their eyes look bigger than they are. They have child eyes, and you'll see that actually in anime quite a bit. And pretty much with almost all animation where children are featured, they will have larger heads, smaller bodies, and big eyes.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah.
Proclaiming, hey, I'm a kid.
Yeah.
No, I think
I get what you mean. I didn't find it creepy at all, but I think I get what you mean. I can see why someone could see that as a bit weird.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are certain things, a lot of things that are done in especially animation style that I dislike, that kind of puts me off watching a lot of it, which is a shame, because the things that I've watched I have liked, but there are a few things with the actual art and animation style that are like a barrier that I need to get past.
And that's my problem generally with a lot of cartoon and animation. So this episode was also directed by Ollantin Deosin Sanmi, who has done two episodes of season one and two episodes of season two of Discovery, including the final Such Sweet Sorrow. I reckon he's a brilliant director.
Yeah, he's really good. I think the episodes that he's done have been great.
Especially Such Sweet Sorrow.
Yeah.
I have a Brandy at that, so.
Yeah, oh, I don't know, man. I was crying through most of that, so.
Yeah.
Mm.
Were you crying in these short tracks?
There was a moment in Ephraim and Dot. I keep saying Ephraim because that's the way they say it in Utah. Ephraim and Dot that I did get, I welled up.
Oh, stay tuned, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you've watched live, you already know which one it is. Yeah. But yeah, I there is a moment that for a second kind of sucker punches me, and then I'm just like, fine.
Yeah.
But hey, everybody knows how easily I cry, and it's not something I can or want to change, so people just have to take me as I am.
It might be something I'll point out on every podcast. Out of love.
Yeah, well, if you want to hear me cry, you can listen to the most recent Postcards from the Edge, which was about Ephraim and Dot and The Girl Who Made the Stars, because there was a comment that I read out that I was not prepared for a certain part of it, and it got me. It got me.
Oh, I look forward to hearing it.
That was great.
I haven't finished listening to it yet. I haven't gotten to that bit.
I've got to watch the last hour and a half of Live.
Okay, to be fair, the actual audio podcast is only the hour, okay? But Bruce and I just decided, hey, we'll just stick around and we'll just stay live and do the talking that we would normally do when we were off camera. So, because basically, once Bruce and I are done with live, we're not done with each other. We still talk for like an hour after that, you know, catch up. Just enjoy ourselves while he's editing stuff together and I'm uploading my files. And yeah, that's what we do.
Well, I mean, I did plonk you and Bruce on the big TV in the lounge. It was great. It was fun.
Glad you think so.
All right. So let's move on to Ephraim and Dot, or Ephraim and Dot, if you're from Utah, as Brandy tells me. We've heard a few different pronunciations of this, but so what did you both think of this one, of the much more, I've heard it described as like Tom and Jerry style, which I kind of like. I would agree with that.
I enjoyed it more, but it wasn't the one that I liked the most, if that makes sense. I enjoyed it because I enjoyed it because there were a lot of obvious callbacks to TOS, even though I didn't get all of them. But I enjoyed the story of Girl Who Made the Stars more. I absolutely loved the beginning sequence, the whole David Attenborough Star Trek documentary.
Oh, yeah.
So that was pretty cool. I guess you could probably see it kind of like a primary school science show in a way.
Oh, yeah. I totally had like flashbacks to sitting in the classroom, like when the teacher wheels in that, like, the thing with the big TV on it, and you're like, yes, we're watching a video this class. You don't have to do any actual work.
Back in my day, it was projectors, fellas. There were no videos. It was all film.
Wow.
Because I am old.
But no, I very much enjoy the beginning bit. To be honest, I think that was probably my more the favorite part about it, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think mine just too. Because it was, as I say, we had that, I've forgotten his name. Who was the narrator?
Kirk Thatcher.
Yeah, we had Kirk Thatcher do it. But wouldn't it have been so cool if we had David Attenborough do it?
Yeah, but it was way cooler to have Kirk Thatcher because he's a Star Trek alumni.
Yeah, but then you could put David Attenborough as a Star Trek alumni.
It was so much nicer to have Kirk Thatcher, but that's just me, because David Attenborough is expected, Kirk Thatcher isn't.
Yeah, true.
And he's come a long way since being the punk on the bus. I mean, he's worked with the Muppets and stuff.
I mean, sure. I'll yield to that, because once I was watching Live, and that's where I found it out that he was the punk on the bus in Star Trek IV. Yep. And, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's good to see someone come back for that.
Yeah, he's
I mean, I like that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I mean, I like that idea. The if the punk on the bus from Voyage Home ends up doing this sort of zoological documentary narration, for those who know my Twitter and Instagram handles, you'll know why that resonates with me.
And if you don't know his Twitter handle, you will know it by the end of the show.
Yes.
So So, yeah. I appreciated that it was Kirk Thatcher. I've actually seen him alive in real life because a few years back he was at FanX, which is our comic convention here in Utah. And he was on a panel with one of my very good friends, Chris Bodley, who is also an amazing artist, which was about the Muppets. And I had no idea he had been so involved in the Muppets. And it was just, wow. I just thought, dude, you are multifaceted and fascinating. And he was also very entertaining. So I enjoyed him very much. And that's when I learned that he also wrote the song that was playing on the boombox on the bus and sang it. So that was all him. All him.
I remember hearing that. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool dude.
Well, that's cool.
Kirk Thatcher.
I had no idea that was a guy doing the narration. I really did love that that was the kind of framing device for it, that it was like this nature documentary about the tardigrade. Yes. Interesting that it didn't give it its own like sort of scientific name like they've done with the tribbles and stuff. So, as far as I'm concerned, the one that I came up with for the first episode of The Edge that I guested on, in my mind, that still stands, which, if I can remember correctly, was Astra Tardigrada Prototaxidae, or nice. Something along those lines.
Was the science correct in it, Nick?
In as much as it can be for giant space-dwelling tardigrades, yeah. I mean, I did look it up to try and see. And tardigrades do lay eggs. They can reproduce both sexually or asexually. Either way, they will a female tardigrade will lay eggs, which are then fertilized by a male, or they will just develop on their own. So, I guess that's what we're seeing here, this female tardigrade just laying her eggs in the engine room. Apparently, that they can lay up to 30 eggs in a clutch, but then that is talking about your real-sized tiny tardigrades. I don't think we saw exactly how many Ephraim laid.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if he laid them in the Enterprise refit, and the A.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
Tiny snafu.
Yeah. No, what did you think about Dot? I thought it was sassy.
Oh, Dot was so sassy.
Sassy Dot.
The best kind of sassy. Sassy, like, I am just trying to do my job here. Will you get out of my way? So,
live long and prosper.
Yeah, Dot was cool. It was what I expected from a Dot. So I think it also had two different colored eyes, if I remember correctly. So interesting. I think one was blue and one was green, if I remember right. It had sectoral heterochromia. Heterochromia is when one eye is a different color than the other. I have sectoral heterochromia, which is both my eyes are basically the same color, but there's more of irregular splashes of gold in one than the other. And so when you look at me, they look like two different colors.
Interesting.
Can you see your face up to the camera?
No.
I mean, the listeners can't see that.
It's really... It's so hard. I'm going to have to I'm not going to do that. Not with the mic in the way. And if I move the mic, it's going to make a horrible noise, and we're not going to do that right now. Maybe later.
Okay. Now, with all the flashbacks through TOS, listeners of the show already know that I haven't seen all the TOS episodes. Have you seen all of them and knew all of the little references?
I did.
I knew most of them because they were pretty much all of them were ones that I had actually seen. Like I haven't seen all of TOS yet, but I think I have seen a good proportion of it. I know that probably the first episode of it I ever saw was Who Mourns for Adonais, which, yeah, exactly. Liam is doing the hand, and I saw that, you know, I saw them flying along and the big hand comes up and I was like, I know that one. Captain America meme. I understood that reference.
Yeah, actually, when I started collecting starships, and I started with the Discovery collection because, Discovery. But the first one that I got was the Discovery. Actually, no, it was the Shenzo. But when I got the Discovery, I did a picture where I had my hand holding the
saucer. Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Because I'm a nerd.
See, I haven't seen the Who Monstro Danaus episode, but I have seen the clips of the giant green hand. I did recognize that one. The one that I didn't know was Abraham Lincoln.
Same.
I'm just like, what? What's going on?
Which episode is that one from?
Yeah. Brandy, please enlighten.
It's been a minute, so I know that I have seen it several times, but I'm bad with, how do I say this? I'm bad with remembering episode titles from the original series for some reason. And also from Next Generation, really. and Deep Space Nine. I'm pretty good on Enterprise. So yeah. Anyway, okay, this one was called The Savage Curtain. And it was actually from season 3. So okay. Yeah, that's from The Savage Curtain. And yeah, it was between the Cloudminders and All Our Yesterdays. So
ah, I see.
But yeah, it's
is it an episode that's worth watching?
I think they're all worth watching in one way or another, except for Cat's Paw. Actually, no, Cat's Paw is just stupid fun. And if you ever want to see, Spock with a cat, there you go. But it's
stupid fun is good too.
Yeah, stupid fun is good, and sometimes it's needed, and it's fine. It's fine. It's not good, but it's fine. So it's just one of those things where, okay, it's they're there doing some stuff on a planet, and then Abraham Lincoln shows up in space, then on the planet, and it's just kind of like, wait, what? What? This doesn't make any sense because this Abraham Lincoln has knowledge that he should not about Vulcans and other things and et cetera ad nauseum. I'm not going to tell you about the whole episode, but yeah, it's one of those where you just, as a kid, I was just going, wait a minute. Abraham Lincoln was not an alien that I know of. So what's really going on here?
Okay, that's...
And then you had the Planet Killer from Doomsday Machine.
Yeah, that was another of the...
That terrified me as a child. Like, absolutely terrified me. So much.
I think it did me as well. That was, again, I think when I was a kid and my mum was trying to get me into Star Trek and specifically trying to get me to watch the original series, she bought a couple of little VHS tapes of just like select episodes. And so I, out of those, like the sort of three that I can remember having on these tapes was Who Wants Fred Anais, The Doomsday Machine, and Amok Time, which we also got a cute little reference to in Ephraim and Dot. If I remember, we got a little bit of that wonderful famous fight music while they were
sorry. That's staying in.
Yeah. I recognized it immediately and it made me laugh.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's turned out, that has just become like, I feel like that has turned up in things that are not Star Trek, just like making a subtle reference to it.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was in Futurama a couple of times.
Yep. Well, so have all the people from the original series.
Oh yeah. I mean, that was a very intentional reference in that show.
Absolutely.
See, at first I mistook the Planet Killer for the Whale Probe.
Oh yeah.
Oh no. They both look kind of tinfoily.
For like 3 seconds. I'm like, yeah. Whale Probe? Planet Killer.
Okay. Whale Probe is a paper towel roll covered in tinfoil. Planet Killer is like a cornucopia thing covered in tinfoil. So they have one's a cone shape, one's a toilet paper or paper towel roll shape, cylinder. Cornucopia? bigger on one end than the other. Paper towel roll.
I may have only seen a little bit of Doomsday Machine.
It's one of those that watching it now, I appreciate the remastering of the original series. I really do, but that they I swear they made the Planet Killer less scary.
Yeah.
For me. It just didn't seem as scary. Its outside was too smooth. The inside wasn't as, you know, crackly and lightning-y, and it didn't scare me as much.
Yeah, it was really freaky in the original. Like, I remember watching it, and I would have been, like, maybe 8 years old at most, and just seeing the kind of the scale of it where you've got the, it's the constellation, isn't it,
yes.
in that one, which is the other ship they find, where it's just sort of slowly falling into the moor, and it's just huge around this. You already know that the ship is quite big, and to see it so tiny compared to the Planet Killer, it's like, oh, that's massive.
Yeah, it was terrifying, because it was one of those mindless things that you couldn't reason with, and you couldn't penetrate its hull. And there seemed to be absolutely no way of stopping it, and it was just going to ravage the galaxy and just keep eating. And that's terrifying. So, yeah, even as a child, I understood that, because I was watching the original series before I could understand English, really. So, because my parents were always watching it, and so we were always watching it, and there was just never a time before Star Trek. It was always there.
Before I get onto the one that I liked the most, I did enjoy the scene in the Tholian web.
That
was cool. I really have to watch that one again, because I've seen that episode.
Yeah. Yes.
And I love that too. I love that too, because in our last episode, we were talking about, what do we want to see in the next season of Discovery?
Tholians.
I think it was you, Liam, who said Tholians. As soon as they turned up, I was like, ha, Liam gets his Tholians.
Yep.
Still haven't seen a Tholian.
Well.
Yeah, true.
If there's an episode of Enterprise in which you do see a Tholian, and it's the second part of the two-part Mirror Universe.
Yeah, because they keep them in, like, the airlock or something, don't they?
Yes. But if you want a better look at one, albeit not in live-action form, you can get the comic Star Trek Year 5, which heavily features Tholians. Cool. Like, heavily. So, you can get a good look at a Tholian.
I haven't finished reading the Saru book yet, but there were Tholians mentioned in that, too.
Yeah.
Yes, there are Tholians in that one.
They're kind of freaky, man.
They're cool. They're just...
Yeah, I didn't say they weren't cool. I'm just saying they're kind of freaky.
It's more a case of, I just want to see them.
It's a difficult creature design to do convincingly in live action with computer animation, because there's no way you can put a person in a suit for that.
Yeah. So, hopefully easier to do now with sort of modern technology.
Have we seen a Tholian walk?
Yeah, they're very spider-like in that regard. They have many legs.
You do see them, you know, in quite good detail in certain missions in Star Trek Online.
Okay.
Feature the Tholians and have them showing up in, like, weird exosuits that allow them to walk around in, you know, oxygen atmosphere and all sorts of stuff like that. It's a bit of a weird game, but it's a lot of it is good fun, and I like the exploration of different aliens that don't get a lot of airtime in the TV show. You get to go and encounter them and usually shoot at them, because it is a game.
Yeah, that's my least favorite part of the game. It's like, I don't want to have a battle with these people right now, and certainly not in space, because my mind cannot switch to three dimensions at the moment. They're coming up from below me now, and I cannot handle it. I fight like Khan. I think in two dimensions. It's a hard thing to get past.
I just suck at all video games, so I haven't really played
them. Well, I don't.
I do. I just love playing them anyway.
No, I am a gamer, so, you know.
Oh.
Yes, I am a gamer.
I'm just I just enjoy playing video games, even though I'm usually bad at them. The one that I'm not bad at is Kerbal Space Program.
And I'm just gay, minus the muh. Anyway.
Oh, that is the best laugh I've had this week. Thank you.
You're welcome. I did like seeing Star Trek 2 and Star Trek 3, you know, fired on by the Reliant. Is it Kruger? I can never pronounce his name.
Commander Krug?
Krug.
Captain Krug.
Krug.
Destroying the ship and crashing in, then it crashing into the Genesis planet.
That made me, that actually almost made me well up, but that's not the thing that made me well up.
No. Mm. What did make you well up, Brandy?
When Ephraim realizes that the Enterprise has exploded with her babies on inside, and the look on her little face as she realizes all her babies are dead, killed me.
Yeah, it stabs you in the heart, doesn't it? I'm like, oh god, it really did.
Yeah, I just went. It was like someone had punched me. So, but I just, but my very next thought was, they are not going to let those babies be dead. There is no way those babies are going to be dead. So, yeah. Then Dot comes in and saves the day, having been an incubator for the remaining eggs.
It is very Trek, though, isn't it? In terms of Dot's just trying to do his job, and then you got Ephraim trying to save his babies, and then all comes happily ever after when Dot's like, oh, these are tardigrade eggs, better save them, and does all it can to save them, and yeah, very happy ending.
Mm. Yeah, it was cute. I think that's the main thing that I took away from Ephraim and Dot, was like it was very cute, even with not, you know, much kind of substance to it. It was like a cute sort of fun romp with like a lot of really fun references peppered throughout it. And this just occurred to me now, and I really like this, was this the first time the refit Constitution class Enterprise has appeared outside of the movies? I think it might be, unless it would have been like the like little models of it in the conference room or something.
Wouldn't that be the same for the A as well?
I think you may be right.
Because they refitted it for the TMP, didn't they?
The refit was motion picture.
Yeah. So it would be, I guess. Because it wouldn't have appeared in TOS.
No, never did.
What was in TAS?
Animated series was the original.
Okay. That was before the motion picture as well.
That was pre-refit.
Yeah.
It's also 10 years pre-Liam as well, so.
Not for Brandy, which is fine.
Now, this episode was directed by Michael Giacchino, and the music was by Michael Giacchino. I loved the music.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
Yeah. And it makes perfect sense that it was, you know, that this episode was directed by a music composer or a music director, because it just fit in so well. It felt like...
Well, it was like a cat and mouse really chase, isn't it?
Yeah, it really did invoke those feelings of, like, old, like, Tom and Jerry kind of Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner cartoons, with that kind of, like, the sort of the chasing and, like, getting away from each other and the very sort of, like, fast-paced.
Yeah. I guess I'm just a child at heart because I enjoyed it very much.
I did too. I really liked it. I liked watching it and thinking I would want to show this to like an actual child as like a first step to try to get them into Star Trek. I'd like to see if it would actually work like that, if it actually holds up as what they've clearly intended it to be, as like a fun sort of cartoon for kids set in the Star Trek universe.
I should show my niece it. She's 5.
Yeah, there you go. They're never too young to be brought into Trek.
Yeah, and then my sister and brother-in-law will hate it. It'd be great.
They hate it?
No, they won't hate it. That's just me using dramatic words. But okay. No, they're not a fan of Trek or just sci-fi in general. So if I got Alice into watching Trek, they'd be a little bit miffed about it, I think.
Well, why not just let someone like what they like?
Oh, no.
If she likes it.
No, don't let her like what she likes. They're just, yeah. They're not horrible people. Gosh. It'll just be Liam gets his own way again.
Well, you can show it to her. Maybe she doesn't like it. I mean, there's no guarantee that if you show her this, that she's going to be a Trek fan. So.
No, I'll force it on her.
Well, it's still, you can't force someone into being a fan of something.
No. So. Well, it worked for Duncan Barrett's kid.
He wasn't forcing anyone.
No, I'm not saying that.
Duncan's just clarifying.
Kid liked it. Duncan liked it afterwards.
Yeah, there were other people who, again, referring to the most, that last Postcards from the Edge, that actually did say the same thing, that they had a child, whether it be their own child or a niece or nephew or what have you, that they showed this to and they really enjoyed it. So,
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah.
I like that.
Sorry, go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I really, really like that we're just getting more diversity of different media and different styles and different ideas of what a Star Trek show can be coming out now. I mean, I love that, you know, we've got sort of Discovery kind of leading it as the flagship, and Picard is going to be sort of quite similar, I think, but much more kind of contemplative and character focused. Lower Decks is going to be a comedy cartoon. We've got a sort of animation for children coming out. Section 31, which I'm actually honestly really looking forward to, is, you know, presumably going to be a bit more of like a spy thriller drama kind of thing. And I really like this. I like that we're going to be getting a whole lot more than just like a crew on a ship in space. I mean, we kind of had a little bit of that with Deep Space Nine, and it was
amazing.
So, yeah, more of this.
Agree.
Just a little fun fact, the tardigrade that was originally going to be a crew member in season one.
Oh, yeah.
That was going to be called Ephraim.
Oh, yep. That's why they've gone with his name.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, Ephraim.
Stop it.
We're inclusive.
It's just a regional thing, okay? So,
but yeah, that was said on After Trek way back when.
Oh, yeah. Remember After Trek?
No. I didn't actually watch it.
My After Trek is Brandy and Bruce.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, that's fair. What would you guys say that what are your final thoughts on both of these short treks, on the first two animated short treks for 40 years?
So, I preferred The Girl Who Made the Stars as a storyline. I thought it was just a lot nicer, whereas Ephraim and Dot was obviously a little bit silly, but it's probably aimed at an even more younger audience. Having said that, I thought Ephraim and Dot was more fun. So, I mean, as I already said at the beginning of the episode, not my favourite short treks. That still goes to The Brightest Star, but also not the worst, which goes to Calypso. As for what they're intended to do, I feel like they're going to do a really good job of it, and I will make sure my niece has a look and see what she thinks. But yeah, I did enjoy the flashbacks to TOS for Ephraim and Dot. I just hope they don't continue doing a lot of flashbacks towards TOS, because then it will start feeling like almost like how Pokemon goes back to Generation 1 Pokemon all the time. It's sort of a little bit frustrating. So as long as they sort of keep the TOS flashbacks at a minimum, I'll be happy with that.
I honestly don't think that they're going to have TOS flashbacks in other shorts. I think that was
so.
Just really, that was the one and done thing. Just here, we're going to throw at you so many references for all you nerds. And that's what they did. So
I suppose it's kind of like how kids shows are always like Marvel, not Marvel movies, things like Frozen and all the Disney films have adult content in them hidden.
Yes.
Yeah. They always have jokes for the parents who are turning
up. Yeah, so I guess that was this episode's way of saying, hey, look, it's not just a kid's show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm down with that. I'll take that.
I think the smartest animation is that way, that there is something for everybody. Because I'm a huge fan of this show called The Amazing World of Gumball. And it seems like it is so very much geared towards kids, but there is so much adult humor in there, not dirty or anything like that, but things that adults can appreciate, that it just makes me laugh so hard. And I can appreciate how kids love that, but also adults love that. So if you haven't watched The Amazing World of Gumball, just watch it. There's an evolved fish named Darwin that grew legs and arms and can talk. And that sounds absolutely ridiculous. But then when you actually get the backstory of that, it's really quite tender and adorable. And has some of the most realistic views of parenting I've ever seen in a cartoon.
Cool.
So, yeah. Anyway, but we're not talking about The Amazing World of Gumball. We're talking about the shorts. And I enjoyed both of them very much. I look forward to future endeavors with animation and telling different stories that don't necessarily take place on a starship. So, looking forward to that very much.
What about you, Nick?
I agree. I really liked both of these. I think, like you, Liam, I wouldn't say they're my favorites of the short treks, but I mean, they were still just really fun. I thought they were really good, and I thought they really succeeded at what they were setting out to do, which I think was to sort of give us a taste of what animated Star Trek can look like in, you know, 2019, 2020. I thought they were really fun. I loved the references. I loved the use of actual audio from TOS from those episodes. I think that was a really great touch. I loved the little bit of the focus on the tardigrade again. I loved the use of the Kalahari folk legend creation story in Girl Who Made the Stars. Yeah, I think these were just overall pretty great, and they make me optimistic for what we're going to be getting from Star Trek in the near future. It's been fun talking about Ephraim and Dot and The Girl Who Made the Stars, but this isn't the only thing we've been talking about on the network today. So, here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
Did I ever tell you the story about how Channel 4 in Oklahoma City played Next Generation at 10:30 because that's when they had played the original series reruns the last time they had a shot at it?
Yeah.
And you think that's insane, but their thinking was, are you kidding? Do you know what kind of ratings we get with Star Trek at 10:30 on Sunday night after the local news? We'd never get those kind of ratings with anything else. And I'm like, but you would get even bigger ratings if you put it at a normal time. And so they finally, going into fourth season, they had a big like, okay, fine. But Best of Both Worlds Part 2, of all the times to change the airtime and then not tell? They didn't promote it?
To the journey!
Another interesting statistic on this, while we're talking about it, is that past a certain point in human history, I forget the exact number, but I read an article on it, but past a certain point, anyone who is alive at that point is statistically likely to be an ancestor of everyone alive today.
Well, that just sort of broke my brain. Can you?
I know. It's weird to think about that. If you go far back in time enough in human history, at a certain, it's like a crossover point almost, where anyone alive at that point, and prior to that point, is likely to be an ancestor of every living human today.
Gosh. That's an amazing stat.
Statistically.
Yeah, that's an amazing stat.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
You're not going to get in Discovery, or at least I hope they don't, things like references to Grand Magus Ron. That's nothing in comparison, do you know? Like,
oh, I can do you one better. Grand Magus Brunt.
Ugh, Brunt. F-C-A.
Jeffrey Combs, I love you.
Can we please have Jeffrey Combs in Discovery?
Earl Grey.
How are we bettering ourselves? And the way
that it seems to be is through high culture.
Well, I think it also ties into this kind of utopianism of Next Gen. I mean, Next Gen is the most, I mean, people say Star Trek is utopian, and I would broadly agree with that. But Next Gen is absolutely the most utopian.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select The Edge and it will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. So, Brandy, where can people find you when you're not chasing a tardigrade out of the Enterprise's engine room?
Oh, that's all I want to do for the rest of my life. Chase tardigrades. You can find me on Twitter at Brandywine12. Brandy is with an I and 12 is a number. You can also see me lurking in the Babel Conference on Facebook. And you can also hear me on, and sometimes see me, depending on when you're available, on Live from the Edge when new episodes of Discovery drop, which we still have not heard as of the time of recording, what day that's going to be. And I'm still thinking it's going to be September, but now people are saying that Sonequa Martin-Green said it would be earlier in 2020. So maybe April, we'll see, but you will be able to join us live on the Trek FM channel on YouTube for that. And also I do a podcast with my fantastical husband, David, called the Dark Corner Podcast, which you can find at darkcornerpodcast.com. And I do swear on that a lot. Well, not as much as I used to. It depends on how angry I am at something, to be honest. But, you can find me in those places and all of those things. So, Liam, where can people find you when you are not being disturbed by children with giant heads and giant eyes?
So, when I'm not doing that and or cowering in the corner, you can find me on Twitter at LS74656. You can find me in the Babel Conference, and you can also find me elsewhere on the network on To The Journey, a Star Trek Voyager podcast. So, Nick, when you're not hatching out of tardigrade eggs in the warp core of, you know, many different ships, where can people find you?
You can find me in the Babel Conference, and also on Twitter at punkzoologist, and also on Instagram at punkrockzoologist, where I post pictures of nature and various interesting insects that I find, and also of the model kits and Warhammer figures that I build and paint, and just kind of general interesting pictures that I take.
If you'd like to help keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Surely everyone's heard of Patreon at this point, but in case you don't know how to spell it, that's patreon.com/trekfm. Go there to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. And that's available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires so much money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. You guys, we appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you will find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd also like to thank our associate producers and little baby tardigrades, Norman C. Lau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Paleo, Lisa Slack, Shoaib Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Modrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Mallett, Chris Trapuzio, and Brian Malosh. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and The Edge.
Thank you for listening, and join us next time to see what's happening on the edge of Federation space.
Hi again. It's mentioned at the top of this episode, here are a few places that need attention. For wildlife services, please look up the Kangaroo Island Wildlife Park, caring for injured wildlife on Kangaroo Island, including koalas, echidnas, and kangaroo. WWF Australia and the RSPCA Australia, which are also helping towards wildlife efforts. Buy a bale for farmers who have lost all their feed for their stock. And also the Wildlife Information Rescue and Education Service, also known as WIRES. For volunteer firefighting services, you could look up the Country Fire Authority in Victoria, Country Fire Service in South Australia, the Rural Fire Service in New South Wales, and the Department of Fire and Emergency Services in WA. Other states and territories also do have volunteer services. If you'd like to ask about any of these particular donation places, please feel free to contact either myself or Nick via Facebook. Thank you.
I don't think this is a face that was made for big screens.
It was fine.
It was fine. Okay. As long as it was fine.
Things I want to say can't be podcasted, Brandy.
It was fine. It was tolerable.
It's all good. It's all good. I'm not fishing for compliments, believe me. I'm not. I'm really not. I'm really not. No winking.
No, I know.
This is my serious face.
And I'm dirty winking, so.
Oh, dear. That's going to get edited out. Anyway.
Oh, it will be. Don't you worry.
Desperately trying to find a
segue. Yeah, good luck.
A segue,
good luck
yeah.
For anything that I say.